The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas, for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Okay, so your new book is coming out in May.
It is.
Are you really excited?
I'm very excited.
How does that feel?
It feels like birthing another baby.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's good. So it's called Sovereign Love, A Guide to Healing Relationships by Reclaiming the Masculine and the Feminine Within.
Yes.
I'd love to talk about masculine and feminine energies. I found that when I leaned more into my feminine is when things started falling into place. As much as I wanted to be like a non-conforming badass boss babe
energy that we were all raised with,
as soon as I started being gentle and sweet is when a ring ended up on my finger.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also, we don't realize how hungry we are to return to some of that feminine energetic. Mm-hmm. We are all, and we're all raised by, you know, a generation of mothers, God bless them, who were teaching us to be really strong feminists. But a lot of what that looked like was us living in a wounded masculine armor and sort of like really embodying a lot of masculine energy most of the time. And so I find that there's sort of like this renaissance of the feminine happening for us as women, and just that there was a lot about the feminist movement that was sort of like, yes, we can do everything men can do, but like from a really wounded masculine space, and like, yeah, wounded men, like maybe men that are like productivity obsessed and really sort of disconnected from their soul space a little bit. And is that who we want to be as women? And so, yeah, I think I come from a background in depth psychology, and Carl Jung was sort of the first person to really explore these energetics that are alive within both of us, that are within all of us, excuse me. Everybody, regardless of how they identify in terms of gender, has both masculine and feminine energetics, but that we've lived in a really wounded masculine paradigm in general, societally, for as long as patriarchy's been around, right? And so we're sort of understanding why that's been imbalanced. And what I found as a couples therapist was how much that imbalance was really impacting how we love one another and making it really challenging to connect in partnership.
That must be so interesting, dealing with like couple. I mean, I just can't imagine how much you know and how much you've seen. And I'll never forget, I had this very powerful boss who is an unbelievable woman who, you know, has now made hundreds of millions of dollars and is capable of, I mean, she's an unstoppable, unbelievable woman. And I remember, and her husband works for her. I mean, so she really is all encompassing of like the dominant human in their relationship. But I remember after they got together, like one night, like going to her house, and she would be like, "Babe, can you get me some water?" Like, I was like, what is that? What the fuck are you doing? But she just at home took her armor off and allowed him to feel like he was the, you know, someone that she could depend on and made him feel really important, because at work, that clearly wasn't the case. You know, she ran the company. And I remember her kind of like looking at me and smiling. I was like, what the fuck was that? And she looked at me and she was like, I have to make him feel good. Like, I've been like screaming all day. Like, I screamed at him today in front of people, you know? And I was like, wow. And my mom always said that a lot, but my mom like ran my dad's office and took care. I mean, he would have been like nothing without her, but she was zero. They were completely codependent. Like, she never went to lunch. She never had friends. You know, he was so
you know, she was always like, go out, see the world, date everybody, do this. But even in my relationship now, like I told you, she lives with us. If she sees me being really tough on my husband, she'll pull me aside and say, I don't want to interject in your relationship, but like, you got to give him a break. You know, he's trying.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I think what you're speaking to is that a lot of, you know, I think that older generation of mothers had an awareness that the core desire of a core masculine man is to feel trusted, is to feel like, you know, I'm your knight in shining armor. Like every man has a little bit of that desire to feel that way.
My husband absolutely does.
Yeah. And so it's like, even if you in every other aspect of your life are this boss babe, really strong, energetic woman, there's something about, and it feels good for us too, a lot of times to like soften into them, right?
Do people have a hard time hearing that from you sometimes?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that it's just, we're so conditioned to feel like that's weakness or I'm making myself like vulnerable to, I don't know, just being too much for someone to handle. And, you know, a lot of this is historic context of, you know, we've had generations of women that have really struggled to trust the masculine, you know, to some extent with good reason. I think there are a lot of historical things about patriarchy that have just created a lot of distortions in the ways that we interact with one another. But there is still every part of us, you know, if we're speaking heteronormatively, still has a desire to be able to be with a man that we feel like can hold all of our feminine energetic and is not going to crumble at, you know, like the first sign of all of the things that make up the beautiful elements of our feminine. But a lot about society and the way that things have been functioning for a long time have sort of made it like we don't trust men to be able to hold that. So we sort of take over. And it's like, I want you to do it, but I don't trust that you're going to do it. So I'm going to like take over. And I find that comes
by the way,
a lot.
I still feel that way.
I mean, listen, we're all practicing this and like working towards it, but it's not a state of arrival
like,
for
no
any of us.
No offense to my husband, but I always joke with him. I'm like, how does the water turn on in our house? Like, where does, like, that bill get paid?
Oh.
He's like, he doesn't, like, just so many things. I just handle everything, you know? But that's also my personality. And so when we got married, there were fights over me wanting him to take over things because I thought that that's what he should do in that role.
Yes.
But, you know, as somebody who English is a second language and this was not their original country, and as somebody whose brain isn't as dynamic as mine, he's a one track, he has to focus on one thing at a time, where I thrive in chaos and can do so much.
Yeah.
I was forcing something on him to create this idea that I had of what like a man should be in a home, and it was causing friction in our relationship. And so once I released him of that and was like, that's not his strength, it really freed us.
Yeah.
I mean, that little aspect, it like freed us so much, and he's very thankful for it. I mean, he's constantly like, every day I get a text from him, thank you for what you do for us and for our household and what you handle, and thank you for allowing me to run my business, and I'm so proud of you. You know, it's allowed him to lean more into what he needs to do, and it's made our relationship truly flourish a lot, which is really nice.
I love that he does that, because I feel like that seeing of the feminine is feedback that I give to the men and couples quite often, because that is like the state of, this feels really good for women when I feel like you see me, all that I do, all that I am. But that other thing you were saying about how your husband has, you know, just like really appreciated that you let him stay in like a specific lane.
Mm-hmm.
That's the masculine energetic. And I think a lot of times where we get into conflict is thinking that men and women experience the world the same way.
Yeah.
They don't, right?
No,
so like your ability to multitask and like juggle all these things and like really understand.
My dad couldn't do it.
Yeah.
My dad grew up screaming at us, you know how hard I work. You know how hard I work. And I'm like, you fucking worked. He's not alive anymore. But I'm always like, God damn it, Dad. I'm like, you worked from fucking 9 a.m. until 5 and you did not work on Fridays.
Yes.
I'm like, I literally, like, I wanted him to, like, come down to earth for a day so I could be like, juicy, how much I work?
Do you know what I do and what I fit in 24 hours?
And what my mom was doing all day to make a home for him to come home to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I'm always just like, oh, these little men.
God bless them. And, you know, and we love that. But I think it's also understanding, like, how to negotiate that some of this is just, like, we process the world differently. And I find, like, so often with couples in the beginning, we can appreciate these elements about each other, but then we'll spend the rest of our lives, like, making the other person wrong for not experiencing the world the way that I do.
But don't you think there's just such a power in just accepting it? Like, to me is the power. Like, instead of me having to nag him or bitch at him for not doing what I think he should or showing off how much I'm doing or I'm doing like, just loving him for what it is that's the, like, it, and just having the inner confidence that, you know, like, he knows and I know, but I don't need to emasculate him.
There's so much wisdom. And I think in what you're saying, there's so much resistance to who this person is. And I am constantly saying to couples, I think our biggest work is bringing the expectations down a ton. Mm. And what I mean when I say that is just, like, loving this person for the truth of who they are versus, like, who they have the potential to be from our perspective. And especially as women, we tend to fall in love with the potential in men.
Oh my God, my girlfriends and I used to call the guys we would date potentials. That was our nickname. We'd be like, amazing. He's a potential. I have a couple of potentials.
But we do that. And a lot of times, exactly as you were speaking to, the potential is like what we would do with our ability to, like, juggle a lot of complexity and see things from the perspective of a woman. But that's just not how the linear brain a lot of times of a man works. And so it's like, yeah, they would do that if they were us, but they're not us, right? But I think it sort of becomes like, how do I love this person as they are, or say this isn't an aligned relationship for me? And I think when we are just, like, in radical acceptance of this person, we actually end up not only having a lot more relational fulfillment, but also I feel like that person does surprise us with their ability. Because there's
You're not allowing that person to even surprise you.
Totally. Yeah.
Hair thinning is complicated. And the problem is that it's actually much bigger than your hair alone. Like your skin, it's a reflection of your health, and internal factors can impact the way that your hair looks, feels, and grows. And that's why Nutrafol is a whole body approach. It multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker, stronger hair. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. It is physician formulated with drug-free ingredients. It supports healthy hair growth from within. So it targets stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, and metabolism as they evolve through a woman's life. For me, I know that the postpartum formula was essential to my postpartum journey when it came to my hair, because as somebody who's had hair shedding for most of her life, I was so scared to have extra shedding postpartum, and I did not at all. I cannot tell you what a relief that was. My God. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol's women's hair growth supplement for 6 months. All you need to do is go to Nutrafol.com, take their wellness hair quiz, and you'll get a personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code BEST. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code BEST. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code BEST.
Do you want to start a company but have no idea where to begin? Or do you have dreams of becoming an influencer? Well, the Life with Mariana podcast is here to help. I'm Mariana Hewitt, a Los Angeles-based influencer and co-founder of the clean skincare line Summer Fridays. Each Tuesday, I'm talking to my friends, from business owners, wellness experts, and more, to share all of their best advice for you to live your best life. Make sure to tune in and subscribe to my podcast, and follow me on Instagram at Mariana_Hewitt to see what's coming up each week so you don't miss an episode.
Do you feel like some of that comes from having parents that are like, I feel like women have this, I mean, a lot of people have this, I don't want to be so gender normative, but like this, like, I deserve this and I deserve that, and I need this, 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 and this. you know, we have parents that are like, don't settle, you deserve the world, and da 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 da. And then it's kind of like, okay, well, then you're like, I don't know. It's like, who is this person going to be that can do every single thing that you think they're supposed to do, that you are worthy of? And are you doing those things?
That part, right? Yeah. That thing of like, am I that person that I desire to have a relationship with? But I often say, you get to want whatever you want. You genuinely do. Like, sky's the limit. That may be too limited. And you don't get to mold other people into what you want.
Mm.
So it's like, this person is either aligned in terms of what feels like authentic partnership, or they're not. But I think so often it's like, yeah, if he just like shaved his beard and he got a better job and he did X, Y, then he would be the perfect man for me. And then it's like a lifetime of a lack of fulfillment, because that's not who this person necessarily has the desire to be.
Mm-hmm. What do you, I mean, this is like such a huge question, but it's like, what do you suggest? We have a lot of women who listen to the podcast who are, you know, classic, like, I'm getting older and I'm single. Mm. Blah, 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 blah. But it, for me, it wasn't until I was super fulfilled, and I've had four boyfriends total, including my husband.
Mm.
And each time they were basically, it was exact times that I wasn't looking for anything, that I was living my best life.
Yes.
I was in my best place. So I was able to kind of catch that after the second relationship and be like, okay, well, it's not going to happen again until I get into like a really good space. I'll just say the third one I dated kind of after a heartbreak and like wanted to be wanted. And that was the worst relationship I've ever had. So what's your advice for women who, you know, I think first of all, we got to like get rid of this idea that like our time is going to be up, you know, but what is your advice for women who are seeking a relationship? Because you talk a lot about fulfillment.
Yeah. Well, I think it's some of what you said, in that like so often we're just fighting against this societal norm that like we're incomplete until partnered. Like you'll hear people at parties like, she's so great, why is she alone? Right. Mm. And that's like the baseline should be partnered. I think not only is that shifting a little bit as the world is shifting, we're living through a time period where for the first time, women especially are choosing to partner for very different reasons. You know, like I was looking at it the other day, Pia, like we couldn't even have credit cards until 1974. So there's so much about
what?
Yeah. Like women could not get a credit card with their name on it until
the 70s.
And so think about how recent that was.
That's
right?
So recently.
And it's like, all of these things about like why we've decided to partner are shifting as like, I can make my own money. I can take care of myself. Mm-hmm. I would like, if I'm, you know, attracted to men, I would like a man in my life, but I don't need him here. And if it's not going to be fulfilling, I'm not going to do that. Right. Yeah. And there's been all these research studies done on like younger people and how much less they are partnering. And I think it's just that they're starting to question, like, why do I want to do this? Do I want to do this because my parents did this? Is this like true for me?
And I'm a huge advocate for being single and not having kids.
Well, I mean, I think like as mothers were like, listen,
you fucking
know you want this before you make this choice.
Because outside of like, I think people just consider kids as this like newborns and toddlers. But like I'm like elementary school, high school, adulthood. Like this is not like a thing that you do for a little bit, you know? Like
it's real.
Think about how awkward. Yeah. Like your son's 7, like he's about to enter awkward preteen era and then like teen era, and how exhausting that's gonna be. And if you don't have your life in a place where you are I mean, and life changes so much, obviously that's a long period of time. But I keep saying, like, if you don't have the right partner, or you don't even need a partner, but if you're not, you know, if you're struggling and this and that, like, how are you going to also take care of another kid? Why not just live life in beautiful chapters where you like date various people and get to travel the world and get to use all your income on whatever you want instead of like daycare and a tutor because your child is behind, you know? I mean, I really am like, and of course we look at our kids and it's like, unbelievable that you exist and what a miracle. But I'm also like, it's a miracle to be able to just like live and live your best life forever too, I think.
Absolutely. I think multiple things can be true at once, that like we adore our children and it is a serious thing that we take on when we decide to be parents. But also for couples, I find that those first 2 years, especially of parenthood, are really taxing on a relationship in ways that we're not often honest about, right?
Totally.
It's just like we as women are just like desperately keeping her head above water, all of the things, especially in the beginning, men feel really inept and like, what is my job here? What do you want from me? Everything I'm doing feels like it's wrong. And what nobody talks about is motherhood, especially in the early stages for women, we are really in our masculine. So it's really sort of like, task, tackle, I got this, I contain this, got to keep this kid alive, right? Mm-hmm. And so it can feel like a little bit of a battle of the alphas a lot of times.
It's so interesting you say that because I approach having a newborn with such a pragmatic sense to me. I'm very like, it's every 3 hours. Like, this is like, I can take a nap during, like, I just get very clear because it's just because I'm surviving.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that there's like a lot of times even that pragmatism, like we don't necessarily have that conscious awareness. So it's just, it feels like we're sort of in survival mode and we're struggling. And, you know, in collectivist societies, women used to do this with an entire village of women around them supporting them. And we don't have that anymore. You, it sounds like, have some support in the house, which is beautiful.
It is, but I don't bring, it's so funny. Like when we had, again, we had Carmel, everyone's like, well, you have your mom. I'm like, I don't bother my mom at night. I would never call her. There was one time where Carmela was crying so much that then I started crying. And then Davide felt lost. And we woke up my mom and we were like, can you just sit here with us? Like, we just need, because the energy between the two of us was a lot. And there just needed to be. But we never, those first 4 months, we just hunkered down. And he got really helpful, but we had discussions in depth every night at dinner, all three of us. What do we see in our friends' kids that bother us? What do we see in our friends' kids that we love? What do we see in the parenting that we love and do and don't want to do? Do we want to put our relationship first? Do we want to put Carmela first? Do we want to sleep trick? It was like, what happens if, you know, if I, you know, if you didn't go back to sleep, but then she has to wake up, like, are you going to wake up? Like, it was very... We discussed it a lot. So it wasn't like something's happening and everyone's screaming and we don't know what to do, which obviously does happen. But everyone kind of had a role.
Yes.
And that was very helpful. And that's going to go out the door a lot of the time, of course. But there was this genuine understanding. And if I said, I got it, it wasn't a fake, I got it. And then I resent him for it. I was like, I got it.
Oh my God. You're speaking my language.
I hate when people fucking do that.
Yeah, but I think there's so much consciousness that you're describing in the way we tackled this really huge thing that is cataclysmic shift in the way that we've been living as a couple, the way that we've been doing life. And a lot of times that's not there. And so it can feel really destabilizing to a relationship. But I think when we have a partnership or when I meet someone, when I'm single, where we are able to do those things, where I am able to have those conversations like you're describing, then it's justified to join in partnership. But my dream is that we all sort of feel like, yeah, I am loving my life.
Totally.
And, you know, a partner would be amazing, but I'm not holding my breath until that person is here, because as you were describing, when we're in that space of like doing all the things that fill us and we have a full life, regardless of whether or not we're in a partnership, all of a sudden we find relationships that are a little bit more aligned organically, I find, you know?
And then maybe you're not making excuses for that hurt. Like you're able to, when someone does come in, you're able to really, I think that a lot, that was one of my questions for you. Like, how often do you see women, we talked about like potentials, but like it's almost becomes this ego situation where you just don't want to fail. And so you're staying in something. And that's why I almost did that with my ex, where I was like, well, I'm getting older. This is my window. I don't, we moved it. We live together. This is going to be a huge failure. I'm going to look like a failure.
Yes.
Because then you have this idea of like what our life is going to be and the whole thing. So what's your advice for that? I mean, because they, takes a lot of strength to be in something and know that it's not right, but you could stay in it and you could fulfill the things that you think you're supposed to do.
Yeah. Well, even that is part of a wounded masculine paradigm that teaches us like what's important is how things look on the outside, like our highlight reel on Instagram, like, you know, our Christmas pictures or whatever at the holidays, not the actual felt sense of how this feels for me, which is the feminine, right? So that's how we've been conditioned to experience what matters. I really love to reframe the idea that there's ever a failure when relationships end. Like, if this was the curriculum at this phase of my life, what did I learn through this relationship dynamic?
But
nobody's failed. Like, how could we fail? This is a life school. All of it is for learning. Because you're right. A lot of times I think we stay in relationship dynamics far after they've expired because we're just afraid that we're going to be judged or people are going to feel like we failed or I'm going to be alone forever. All of the things that
I really
loved
you guys together.
Yes.
You know, it's a lot of
totally. Yeah. And it's just, it's really fear-based approach to what all of this is, right? And I think that there's an expansive way of holding it, which is, you know, there's limitless opportunities for me to connect and find life force, but I have to believe that in order to experience it.
You talk a lot about being connected to your spirit and life force and stuff, which I love. And my mom and I talk a lot about that. That's kind of how you talk a little bit about that and how that guides you to your intuition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that that's, you know, another element of the feminine that we're really starting to understand and tap into more is the feminine is our soul space and our intuition and just that thing of like our knowing. And I think we as women certainly have a heightened experience of our intuitive gifts, but we've really been conditioned to question ourselves, to second guess ourselves and feel like I have to have a valid reason for what I feel. There has to be some evidence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have never experienced a woman when something happened, right? Like, let's say my boyfriend's cheating on me, that we don't know. We always know. But we second guess ourselves and we question ourselves because we've really been conditioned to feel like intuition is kind of crazy and silly and like you can't prove it. So, you know, but I think we're coming back online with all of these elements of our innate knowing about these things and all of the beautiful aspects of what the feminine within all of us is. And it's, you know, I think this is sort of like a renaissance period that we're living through because things are shifting and it's not going to be shifting from a patriarchal culture to a matriarchal culture from my perspective. But I think it's going to be a more integrated experience. And all of us are going to like really value these masculine and feminine aspects of who we are more.
You feel like you were able to tap into a lot of that through your yoga practice?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that
breathing.
That's, yeah, totally. And, you know, in the book, what I get into is like, here are the tangible tools that I used to really integrate my masculine and feminine so that it's not sort of like, you know, they're just like ethereal, like, yes, just get in touch with your soul. And people are like, what is that even? Like, what are you saying? Right.
Yeah.
But absolutely. I think like meditation and yoga. And there's all these ways that we talk about the soul and spirit in ways that like 10 years ago, people would have been like, what is she saying? Right. Mm-hmm. And now you're just like, yes, obviously, didn't I? Like, it's not even like a thing that I'm blinking at. But I think that's part of the rise of the feminine within the collective.
I really want to get the books for my nieces.
Aww.
I have like three nieces who were between like 18 and 25. And it's just like fascinating to have like three girls like that. I'm just like, here we go.
Oh,
like,
oh,
look at all these choices and all these.
Pia, I was facilitating a retreat a few months ago and it was so fascinating. It was like this juxtaposition of two groups of women. And the first group of women were older. They're like in their mid to late 50s and just experiencing like when we were talking about like the feminine, like all of this grief, all of these ways that they realized they'd self-abandoned and really formed an identity around their children, all of these things. And then there was this younger group of women who were also there and they were like in their early 20s and they were like, listen, nobody's coming from my yoni unless they come correct. All right. This is my sacred womb space and I know my worth. And I was like, girl, if I had some of what you have when I was in my early 20s, I was like, this is beautiful. But it was so fascinating to watch them sit together and like teaching one another, right? Like the older women were like, yes, my womb is sacred. And the younger women were like, oh God, like I get to decide for myself. Like I don't have to follow this programming just because someone says that I have to be married with kids. Like I can choose that, but that might not be my choice. That might be my choice later.
We don't have communities. It's just not how our neighborhoods are designed.
Yeah.
And so that is wisdom. Like my husband always talk about this when we go to Italy. He's from Italy. We always talk about this when we go there and come back or like things that he misses.
Mm-hmm.
He always had they call like their cafes like bars. He had the bar, or he had the barber, or he just had the square where all the old men would hang out.
Yeah.
And you would get so much advice, because oftentimes you don't want to hear advice from your fucking parents. It's like it goes in one ear and out the other, that it's not until that experience happens where you're like, you were right, or oh my God, or blah, blah, blah. Or maybe you don't have parents that you're aligned with by any means, but he got so much wisdom from older people. So it's so nice to hear that you had a situation where those two groups were together, because, you know, I wish we lived in a place where every neighborhood had like a little gathering place, you know, where you could see that woman at the hair salon or the nail shop and you could talk and you could talk, because it's so nice to hear advice from an older woman that's not your mother, you know? Like, or someone that's related to you.
I love hearing that. And I think that this is one of the things where, you know, not to knock American culture, but I think we're a young country in a lot of ways.
So it's just different, you know?
Yeah. And there's things that we just don't really see the value in,
we're
like
also not
community.
Set up in religion.
That's real.
Those squares are based around churches.
Mm, yeah. And that brought so much community into our lives, and that we were connected to different phases of life with the people that we got to have in our community. And I think we've really lost the value of that. I often say we're a society with no elders. We're not like, there's like no elders that we're learning from. We're sort of like, who's in charge here? Like, I don't know. And I think there's a real loss in that. But I love hearing that that's something
that. Well, there's supposed to be like respect for older people. I think I see a lot, this is a whole other conversation, the attitudes I see kids having on TikTok. I mean, just like, okay, you talked about the older women in your group. You mentioned something that I wanted to bring up, which is that they lost their identities having children.
Yes.
I have so many thoughts around this.
I want to hear.
But I'd like to hear yours first.
Yeah. You know, I think that.
That balance is hard.
Yeah. You know, so I'm like the most introverted person on the planet. And when I had my kiddo, I was so struck by like how strong the desire to be with other women was. And so what I understand about that from like a depth psychology perspective is that there's like this way that we've lost connection to, I'm shifting from the archetype of the maiden to the mother, and we have no containment for that. And it feels really destabilizing. What we've been sort of societally conditioned to do is put all of our energy into our child and create an entire identity around, well, now I'm the mother and this is what I am. And as we were talking about, that's like a very specific energetic to be in, a lot of times a masculine energetic. And there's all of these ways that like our feminine soul space, our space of like, you know, me when I'm just like free and doing what I want to do. Totally. And just like, you know, I think a lot of times I hear mothers talk about the grief of just like never being alone and never having like, you know, I get to do whatever I want. I don't have to tell anyone where I am. I just like, I'm just free. And we can certainly build that in, but it can feel a lot less accessible than it was before we had a kid. Like this kid needs me actually for their survival. But what ends up happening so often is, you know, Carl Jung said, there's no greater burden placed upon children than the unlived lives of their parents. And I think so often creating an entire identity around our children becomes an incredible burden for them to carry. And we're not doing that intentionally.
So aligned with you.
Yeah.
Because what I have noticed is there's a clear difference. You know, a lot of my friends have had kids, and I noticed a clear difference between moms who fulfill their identity by needing to be needed by their children.
Yes.
And I don't have that. I was, you're confirming, because I was like, am I like dead inside? I'm like, I can't be dead inside because I love connection so much. I love my husband. My mom lives with me. Like I'm so, like, clearly I have so much desire for connection and family, but it's my goal for my daughter to not need me.
Oof. I'm like, mama, well done.
And that came
so good.
That came down to like sleep training choices, which I know is very, but like, also, it comes down to like, I work. Mm-hmm. And so I work because I need to, but also if I didn't need to, I still would.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, obviously there's nothing I wouldn't do for her a thousand times over. I'm clearly obsessed with her. She's my child. Like,
yeah.
But I am very, when she is independent playing or when she like runs into school and doesn't look back at me, I'm like, I did it.
I'm winning as yes. mama. Yeah.
Because it just causes her anxiety.
That's right.
And it causes me anxiety.
That's right.
And I don't want any fucking anxiety. I feel like we're I feel like we're just like all driven by anxiousness.
Oof. Yeah. And the thing is, you are modeling for her what she gets to be and like what it is to be a woman. Like you're her first.
Jesus Christ. I do that every time. How many times have I done? Can you glue these to the goddamn thing?
I'm dying.
It's once every time.
So good.
Sorry.
No.
Yeah, but you're modeling for her what it is to be a woman in the world, what it is to be a woman with children, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times what I hear is like, and I think I certainly felt some of this, like, I am really loving my life. I don't want to be a mom because I feel like I'm going to have to give all of this up. But mm-hmm. that doesn't have to be the case. But also, I think that there's this thing of what you're speaking to, like, absolutely, our goal as parents should be that our children feel really securely attached and that the world is a safe place and that, you know, I'll always be here for you. I'm going to be the constant in your life. And I want you to explore and experience all of the things that you came into this life to do. Mm-hmm. But what you're speaking to, and I think I really love to normalize, is like, we are unbelievably codependent as a culture. We're just like conditioned to really sort of like, I'm okay if you're okay. I'm okay if like you're good with me. Mm-hmm. And our children are one of the biggest places that that plays out. And we don't talk about, because it's uncomfortable to talk about, the fact that like the energetic of codependency is longing to be needed. And so there's a real thing where we get really codependent with our kids. And I feel like if you need me, you're not going anywhere. And you're going to like always like want to be close to mama. Mm-hmm. And that can be something that is ultimately a little bit harmful, because it's sort of like, I believe that you don't believe in me and my ability to thrive in the world without you, when you cultivate that dynamic, you know?
Well, I had that with my mother, who lives with me. Because I can't, the thought of her living alone, I'll die.
Yeah.
Her waking up alone in an apartment or condo that's new, not in the house she lived in for 40 years, without, you know, her purpose has always been the house and taking care of people. And like her, thinking about her waking up like purpose, and then I think about how that could, you know, at her age, have her like deteriorate so quickly.
Yeah.
Is really, but I never... Now I don't want to do sleepovers with her for, you know, sexual assault reasons, because I've seen too much on TikTok. But I never slept over at people's houses. Everyone came to my house. I never went on trips. I went to camp once for 4 days and like left. I mean, listen, this comes down to like my parents fought a lot, or my dad was feisty. He had CTE, would have like explosive episodes. And I was their referee and I was her buffer with him. So I always felt like I needed to protect her and take care of her. And so I didn't want to leave her. And when I got into college in New York and moved, I was severely depressed for a year. She slept in my bed. I slept with pillows that were covered in her perfume. I listened to her favorite music. Like, I cried. Like, my roommate would call her and be like, Pia hasn't gotten it. Like, I literally be like, the day just needs to pass so I can go to bed. For like a year, I was so depressed because I had left them.
Yeah.
And I felt responsible for them. And so I definitely don't, I still feel responsible for her. But I don't, we obviously have a very healthy relationship, which is why we're willing, and I don't resent her for that by any means. But I just, it's funny because she and I were so close, and she's obviously still so close with me and Carmela, but she and I are very aligned with wanting to get her in an independent place and wanting her to be content on her own and really happy. And so, you know, like she ran into school. She's in a new school program. And so she ran into school today, and it was the first day that she didn't cry. She'd been a little bit, she wasn't crying for me. She was just like, I don't want to be here, because it's basically, it's for kids with delays. And so it's an exhausting day for her. But she'll look at me and be like, like, I want to go to my other school. And I'm like, I know, I'm so sorry. We just have like 10 weeks of this and then we're out. Aww. But this morning she like ran in and we all looked at each other and I was like, ah, you know, she's happy. I'm happy. We're all happy. There's no anxiety around this. We're all cruising.
Yes.
But I really have seen such intensity from some of my friends putting so much weight on their children and needing like, oh, I got him. It's fine. No, he just really needs his mom. And I'm like, he didn't need you. Like, he wasn't even looking for, you know, like, and this intensity. And I think it just gives you such a purpose. And it's clearly the most important purpose a human can have. So I understand it. But I just think it's something that maybe is not talked about a lot because you're supposed to be a mom.
Yes.
You're supposed to sacrifice your life and your whatever and make it all work and be this, you know, Mother Mary who's taking care of the babies and doing all the stuff. And I don't find that to be helpful for anybody.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's tough because it's nuanced and multiple things can be true at the same time. And I think what you're speaking to is the goal is more interdependence, which is that space of like, I can't fix it, but I can go through it with you, which is exactly what you're describing you doing as a mama. You know, I love that. That's so beautiful. And I think there's ways that we have a lot of advantages that maybe our mother's generation didn't have. So we can sort of understand that they were doing the best that they could with the tools they had a lot of times. And I think it's, you know, like you said, there's no reason to say like you did this wrong and that there's any sort of like animosity around like what we can't go back and do differently, but we can understand like here's some of the choices I want to make differently and that there's beautiful aspects of it. Like you get to have a multi-generational family. Like in my dream world, that would be so much more of a prevalent thing. Mm-hmm. But with what you were saying about your friends, I think that is true for so many of us as women. I will certainly like, I was absolutely guilty of that in the early stages of motherhood. And I think that it can be hard to hear, but also there's a way that we are hungry to reclaim aspects of ourselves in ways that we don't even realize until we have the felt experience of it.
Yeah.
I remember the first time my kid's dad was like, go and just like have a night at a hotel by yourself. And I was so resistant. But then once I was there, I was like, oh my God.
You're like, what's his name?
I was like, I'm sure I had a child. I can't remember. But yeah, like sometimes we just have to give ourselves like the, like, I'm going to put down some of the shame and let myself feel it, you know?
Yeah. My TikTok algorithm keeps serving me studio apartments in New York. And I'm always like, oh my God. And then I'll like find myself thinking about how I would decorate them. And I was like, why am I doing that?
You're like, am I about to make a break for?
About a 500 square foot, $5,000 month apartment in Manhattan.
Yeah. But I think that that's an aspect of me would love that, right? Like, and for most of us, that's not like a super viable option while we're tending to our kids. But part of me does long to escape and just be in my like wild, untamed feminine energy where I get to do what I want and like roam free. And
I don't think I would know what to do with it for very long.
It's I can weird, be good for a day.
Like when my husband goes out of town, we have a very healthy, but very, I mean, I'm not codependent in like, if I'm not okay, he's not, you know, whatever, but we love being around each other.
Wow.
You
know, like, but that's beautiful.
A lot. I like hanging out with him a lot, you know, so. I know, he was like, why do you have so many studio apartments in your...
It's like, babe, should like, we... Is there something I should...
I was like, because my 20s in New York was tip-top fucking fabulous.
Aww.
Like, please. Oh my God, I think we like accidentally covered every single thing that I wanted to cover.
Which is
amazing. I want to talk about, outside of like what's in the book, like your experience writing a book.
Oof, well... You know, it's so funny. One of my favorite spiritual teachers is Wayne Dyer. And I remember him talking about how he used to just like, books would just come through him. And I was like, that's fascinating. Like that he didn't do any research. He would just have an idea for something. And it was like, something was like flowing through him. And I was like, I feel like I'd love to write a book one day, but I have no idea what I would write about. And I was like, it'll come. And so as I was sitting with couples, I started to notice how like these masculine and feminine energetics are just like, everywhere.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, what's like the most common? Is that the most common? Clearly, it might be it's your book. Is that the most common thing that you feel like you have to work through with couples in therapy?
Yeah. Well, what I saw was that as I realized, like, we're all like attempting to compete for energy, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like when I believe that, like, say I'm a core masculine man, if I believe that I don't get to integrate and experience, like, you know, all of these feminine aspects of myself because society has conditioned me that I don't get to, I will attempt to outsource those things from you, right? So I will really look for you to be this external mother and I will want all of my nurturing and all of my like feelings to be sort of like processed through you. But there's all of these ways that starts to make women experience the men in their lives like children, kind of, right? And so we start to mother men because they're sort of looking for that external mother, and it's not conscious, but that's what they do. And so, I know, right? Not sexy.
Yeah, I just gross.
You're like, oh, well. I know, and that's one of those things, once you hear it, you can't unhear it. So like all the time, women will be like, oh, I am mothering him. I'm like, I'm sorry, but maybe now we can sort of.
I just picture this like dude sitting on the couch like, what?
She's like,
you're a big baby. Is what?
Yeah, but you know, so much of what society teaches men is that they get to experience what would be their feminine, their like emotional landscape through either anger or sex, and that's it. That's like where they get it.
Oh yeah, wow, that makes sense.
So the most common thing that comes up for couples is like this dynamic of the man always wants sex because ultimately what he's doing is self-soothing, self-regulating through sex. And the woman is
like, we wondered what that was.
Yes. It's like, she's just like, Jesus, this has nothing to do with me. Cause again, the feminine gets aroused in being seen. And if I feel like you're not actually seeing me, you're just sort of using me as a pacifier.
I had one of my girlfriends say to me once, it was so funny. She was like, sometimes you just have to be a whole.
Well,
and I was like, oh my God. Like, that's so bad. But I was like, he needed that moment. You know what I mean? And I mean, was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but like 15, 20 years in, you can imagine like it starts to feel a little old to be just a whole. And so I
think it's such a vulgar, horrible thing. But I understood what she was saying. Like, I was just like, I get it. He needed a minute with you.
But we intuitively sense this is what you're doing. You're self-regulating through me. This isn't about me. Mm-hmm. And so women start to feel really resentful and they start to like use sex as a way to sort of like wage a little bit of like the power dynamics. And so it comes up, and what I support couples in is like, you know, you have ways of accessing your own feminine energy. And so back to your question about writing the book, as I would start to work with these energetics with couples, and I have this chart that I always give couples, and I'm like, okay, so you take this chart and you guys do this at home and practice it. And they'd be like, oh my God, this is so good. Do you have a book we can read or something? And I'd be like, no, but I'm going to write one. Cause I feel like I started to see like, this is what nobody's talking about. That's like going on in our dynamics.
That's so interesting. I always wondered, Davide's not like that. He like, when he's busy and stressed, like sex is not on the table for him. And I'm more of like, can we just like bang it out really quick? And he's like, no, it has to be a feeling or a movement or no. And I'm like, fuck.
I'm like, does he have a brother?
Support for today's episode comes from Jenni Kayne. Perfect timing, honestly, because spring is around the corner. And I love nothing more, especially when I'm pregnant, than like a slip dress and a little cashmere cardigan for when the nights get chilly. And that's what Jenni Kayne does best. They are a California brand through and through, and their staples make getting dressed easier than it's ever been before. Think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined, from luxurious cashmere sweaters and iconic accessories to elevated versions of your everyday basics. Not to mention, they have the most incredible home essentials too. Our TV room has a lounge, a couch, and a chair from Jenni Kayne. And when the pieces got dropped off, I mean, this is a house I grew up in. Like, for 40 years, my parents have had this house, and we've never been able to configure this room to make it cozy and comfortable. My mom and I cried when they brought the pieces in. The home goods are just incredible. And I get compliments every time I wear something from Jenni Kayne. Everything is so comfortable. I love the sweaters. I can truly live in them all year round. And they're known for their super luxe yet lightweight pieces. So trust us, they do perfect California cashmere. They have a cashmere fisherman, the Flynn cashmere sweater, and the cashmere cocoon cardigan that are their best sellers in every season. But I love cozying up to them on like a cool summer night. Like, as soon as that breeze comes in, I'm like, ugh, just feels so cozy and chic. And listen, our friends at Jenni Kayne are here to help you find your new uniform at JenniKayne.com. Our listeners get 15% off your first order when you use code BEST15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at JenniKayne.com, promo code BEST15. Let getting dressed be one less thing to worry about.
Well, yeah. I have this theory that some of this is American men, and I'm sort of like fascinated about. us dating men from other cultures? Because I feel like some of this stuff is, you know, just a way that we're socialized.
Yeah, right? I think what's interesting is that, by the way, I speak about my husband very highly, but he's also extremely difficult and hot-tempered and has no emotional regulation by any means. And that's something that, like, we're working on, because he, the other day, when he gets really stressed at work, he dumps it on me, and I'm, like I said, I'm surviving. You know what I mean? Like, I'm doing so much. And so I've had to say to him, like, it'll end up in a fight. And then he'll come to me and he's seeing red and nothing I can say. There's no conversation that's allowed to happen. I'll try to remove myself. He's like, no, I need you, you know? So then he'll, like, I'll separate myself for a second. And then I'll have to say to him very calmly, like, you can't dump your stuff on me, because I have too much. I have a child inside of my stomach. I have a daughter that I take care of. You know, he works so much away from us. So I'm like, I'm keeping all of this is my little bubble that needs to be protected and like free of stress. And I was like, you need another outlet. That's not me. Absolutely. It cannot be me. And so, like, then he'll be like, all right, like, I'll be willing to, like, you know, I'm like, I think you need therapy. Like, speaking culturally, you know, I think that, yes, there are major differences that I've noticed. Absolutely. But I do think that, like, everyone has their shit regardless. Yes. And I think a lot of men in general don't have anyone that they can go to to talk about. You know, it's like, I can't be that person for you. You know, I have my girlfriends that I can call and vent to, but men don't do that to each other. They don't call and talk about their hard day and get advice and vent. And
yeah, I got to tell you, there's so many things you say where you're like, speaking my language. I love it. I'm like, she gets it. But that's real. And there's so many ways that we socialize men to just, like, be stoic and, like, push it down and, you know, man up or whatever the thing is. And it does. It's like, I always say, like, it's like pushing a beach ball down under the water. Eventually it comes to the surface, but it comes to the surface in some explosive ways. And a lot of times that's anger, or, like, me, like, needing to channel that into something that's not super healthy. But men do need outlets just like we do. And, you know, there was a time when men used to, like, really be in community with their brothers, and they would be tender with one another, and they would really tell the real about what was happening with them. And they don't do that as much anymore.
How are you? I mean, you have a son. I have one in my stomach.
Aww.
How are we going to make them love and respect women without being little bitch ass mama boys?
I mean, listen, they're going to be, I don't know if they're bitch ass, but they're definitely mama's boys. I'm so excited for you for that, because there's something about little boys with their mamas. It's
I know.
Everything.
I see the way that the two of them are, and I'm like, I want in on that. Like, that's so cute.
It's so good. They are just like,
I hung on my dad, and my brother hangs on my mom, and I just can't wait for that.
It's the best. Like, there's something about the way your little boy looks at you. You're just like, am I this queen? I didn't know.
But that's also really funny, because there's that, like, feminine and masculine energy kind of realizing itself in, like, the most pure form.
Yes.
Of you just being, like, in awe. I mean, that's, like, it's so primal.
And that's healthy. Like, I do think it's actually our job as mamas to be that space for them. Mm-hmm. But again, in collectivist societies, there would be a period where men would take the young man out and sort of initiate them into manhood. And we live in a society of uninitiated men for the most part. So like, maybe football or, like, whatever sports team they're a part of would be, like, the closest thing.
Sports is the closest thing to feeling like a community of men.
Yeah, but they don't have any sense of, like, I go off in the woods and I, like, see what I'm made of and I come back returned and I, like, have a sense of self.
We gotta send them out to the
woods.
So,
like, they need to be out with their brothers doing whatever men do in the woods. Like, I don't know what y'all do out there, but get to it. Like, that's not for us to be.
Should have packed Carlo back.
Yeah.
Like,
take him out of the woods.
Go to the forest. I'll pick you up in a week.
Teach him to be a man. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's necessary, because we do become that first sense of, like, you know, what healthy feminine energy is for our sons. But then it's important for them to, like, it's like a fatherless society. And it's not because a lot of times there's no father, but it's like fathers who are really disconnected from themselves attempting to raise these young boys, you know?
God, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh my gosh, you were just a delight.
Your Instagram is so great. There's so much wisdom on there. And people are so interactive with your posts.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
I mean, you get, like, people, like, it's amazing. It's so funny. Like, I always look at people's Instagrams really quickly, and you can just see it's your... because you're posting, like, it'll be like a quote about something and there will be like hundreds of comments. People are just like so reactive to what you have to say in such a beautiful way. That what a nice way to live life.
Oh, thank you.
Really, well, truly. Where can people find you?
So my Instagram, as you just mentioned, is danae.logan. And I have a podcast called Cheaper Than Therapy. And yeah, my book's coming out May 28th and it's called Sovereign Love.
Is it on pre-order now?
Yes.
Great. Wonderful. All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Pia.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes this week's episode of Everything is the Best. I hope you enjoyed it. Please rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff. Maybe leave a comment. But remember, shitty comments are for shitty people. Go ahead and follow me on Instagram at Pia Barangini. And I hope you have a fabulous, fabulous rest of your day. Love you. Ciao.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.